Thank you for joining me for another episode of Women Blazers. I'm your host, Deanna Witter. I'm excited to have Angela Spence as my featured guest in this episode. Angela is the director of sales for the Atlanta Hawks and College Park Skyhawks of the NBA and G League. In this episode, you'll hear Angela share her journey starting out as a collegiate basketball player with plans to become a coach and making a decision to shift that dream, which led to discovering the world of ticket sales. Along Angela's path, she's had to face adversity, but she pushed through the challenges by honoring her commitments and seeing the outcome of her hard work and perseverance.
Packed up my things, found a listing on Craigslist for an open room, and moved to start my career in sports.
So you're the crazy person that actually goes and does the Craigslist roommate. That's the scariest thing. How's your mom? I tell you what.
I am 100% the crazy person. And that is not the only time I did that. I've done that twice, and they were both in LA. And it ended up working out perfectly fine, though I would not suggest it in these times. But yes, I'm that person.
So, Angela, you played basketball in college. What did basketball mean to you at the time?
Yeah, so I grew up playing basketball, and it had always been a part of my life at an early age. I was this super tall girl with, frizzy hair, and there weren't, like, that many people that looked like me in my town. So I felt a little different, sometimes felt like an outsider at times, but.
Oh yeah. Okay.
But basketball was like, it was this outlet for me. And in middle school and in high school, I didn't feel like people really, thought I could or would go on to play college ball. So I wanted to see how far I could go. Mm-hmm. And that kind of led to the experience at Santa Barbara City College, which was amazing. It was awesome. So I grew up in a small town called Carpinteria. It's about 20 minutes from Santa Barbara. And so I was home. And the campus is like unreal. It overlooks the beach. The weather's amazing. It's perfect all the time. And I just met some of my really, really closest friends playing basketball still to this day. We are close. But basketball as a whole has always filled this need for competition and teamwork and camaraderie. And, but it had also been a challenge for me at times. I was never the best player on the team. And I realized I needed to work like 2-3 times harder than someone else who just had natural talent. And that was like just to be even with them. So it pushed me. And I got a scholarship to play at Hawaii Pacific University. And believe it or not, it was a little bit of a tough decision for me. And I say that lightly because looking back, that sounds ridiculous. It's Hawaii.
but you're going from Santa Barbara to Hawaii.
Yes.
You wouldn't think you could upgrade from Santa Barbara, but yet you do.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect weather. It's beautiful. Like everything about it. Looking back is like, okay, how could this have been a tough decision? But it was. And it was really because it was the ultimate comfort zone. I was living at home. I was close to family. I was close to friends. And I really did not have to do anything scary. Yeah. And I went from that to moving thousands of miles away from home on an island. And I hadn't even done any type of visit before making my decision and accepting the scholarship. So I just kind of up and went. I remember my mom telling me that it was not going to be this beach vacation, sipping pina coladas year round. She was like, you need to go and give it 6 months, even if you don't like it. Yeah. And by the way, I like still use that to this day of like,
give it 6 months.
Yeah, give it 6 months. Like if I have this big move or big decision, I'm like, give it 6 months. Give it because things take time. But yeah. Anyways, I ended up going, and it was an adjustment. I remember I remember the first day landing or the first day I got there, So our student housing was in the middle of Waikiki, across from a club and bars, and right next to it, there were strip clubs and our campus.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was pretty different. Our campus was in the middle of downtown Honolulu, like amongst businesses. So it wasn't like your typical campus. It was just different from what was expected. And I think it was like the second day I got there, I remember going to student housing and meeting up with my teammates for like 3-5 minutes, just to be, you know, hi, I'm Angela, to be a part of the team, this, that, and the other. And we were supposed to meet back downstairs because we had to take public transportation, and we were going to go as a team from Waikiki to Honolulu. And I got downstairs and they had all left me. I was like, oh gosh, this is all right. I got to figure it out, you know? And I did. And just at that moment, it felt scary. It was, you know, I didn't like it the first couple of months. We were having a losing season. I felt alone, and just the image I had in my mind of what this experience was going to be was like nothing I had imagined.
Do you push through to your 6 month point? How do you get to the 6 month part and decide, are you staying or are you leaving?
Well, so I was like, okay, from the start, I was like, I need to give it 6 months. I need to take my mom's advice. But it's this thing where I started to love it well before 6 months. I started to really enjoy being around my team. I started to love Hawaii and the culture and the people that were there. And it ended up being the best decision for me.
Oh, it's fantastic to hear. So I recall you ended up staying even beyond your time, and you ended up going and pursuing your master's there. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what made you decide to stay and pursue your master's?
So after the 2 years there of actually playing, like I had in my mind that I wanted to be a basketball coach. I wanted to be a basketball coach. So that's the route I was going. And I was actually approached by my coach, upon undergrad graduation, and he asked me if I wanted to stay on as a graduate assistant coach. And that for me was like a no-brainer. I jumped on the opportunity. It was just like, you know, at that point, I absolutely had grew to love Hawaii, loved the teammate, had loved my overall experience. So I was like, yes, absolutely. I'm excited. but also at that time, like before that, before he approached me, I wasn't thinking about getting my master's right then and there. For one, I really didn't have the money to do that. But when he came to me with the opportunity to get my master's and coach simultaneously, I felt so lucky.
Yeah, it seemed like such a great opportunity at that point, right?
Yeah, it was.
So you graduated with your master's in communications. Mm-hmm. And then what was that break-in moment, you know, for you to start your career in sports upon graduation?
For sure. So after getting my master's, my coach then asked me if I wanted to stay on and be an assistant coach for the team. And it was something that like I strongly considered because, again, I loved being around the game. However, it was a volunteer position, and I had been working full-time as a waitress, going to school for full-time. And, you know, when I was playing full-time, but then when I was offered the opportunity to coaching full-time. So I was ready to start making some money and like just figuring out my career long-term. And I think at that point I just decided that I had a shift or a change in the direction I was going. I decided it wasn't going to be coaching. So I came back home and I lived with my mom and my stepdad for a bit before backpacking for 6.5 weeks through Europe with some two friends. Just took a far left.
A little gap time there.
Very much a gap. So I kind of rewind a few years prior. When I was 17, I got to live with a family in Ecuador for 5 weeks, and oh, wow. they didn't speak any English and I didn't speak any Spanish, but but it was like, it was the best experience ever. And really what that experience did was it made me realize that the world was so much bigger than what I was living in. Mm. So when I did end up coming back from Hawaii, and I was like, you know, I wanted this adventure in Europe. So we backpacked, we did the whole staying in hostels thing, and went to London, Paris, Amsterdam, Prague, places in Germany, Italy, and Spain. And it was amazing. It was what I needed just to kind of have a refresher for to jumpstart my career, whatever that was going to be. So I came back and I started the job hunt, not really knowing what I was searching for. So I knew I needed to start somewhere. So I started out with reaching out to people that were in my network to learn about what they were doing, and how they got there, all that good stuff. And mm-hmm. I spoke with an old teammate from Santa Barbara City College who was working as an inside sales rep for the Clippers.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And I remember we had this long conversation. I was asking her all these questions, and I remember her telling me, like, this is the hardest thing I've had to do work-wise. It is an absolute grind, but you get to be around sports, and it's actually pretty fun. And that was enough to be like, to intrigue me, and enough for me to want to learn more about the position, though I had no idea, you know, what sales entailed. And I shortly after learned that there was a job fair at Staples Center. And I think it was like a week and a half later. So I made my way there to see what it was all about. And I ended up getting hired from that event.
So you start off with the inside sales program at the Clippers. And obviously inside sales is the foundation of most sports careers. What was the experience like for you? And what did you learn about yourself in that year at the Clippers?
Oh, inside sales. So first off, let me say that I would not trade my inside sales experience for anything. I learned a ton, not just about sales, but like about myself during that time. And it was the launch of my career overall in sports. With all of that said, inside sales was tough, you know, then yeah. and now, I'm sure. And it was a grind, just like my former teammate had said. I was prepared to work hard, but I wasn't prepared to work hard and not do well. And that was a little bit of my story in the beginning. Yeah. I was the first one in, last one out, and really tried to make it a point to make the most calls, but I just was not selling. I didn't sell a thing for the first 2 months I was there. And everyone who I had come in with had sold something.
So you were the person at the bottom
yep.
of the board.
Yep.
No sales. Yes. 2 months in. Oh yes. yeah. So that's always the most like defeating moment of feeling, you know, in that process.
It was like I would look to my right, look to my left, and you know, the folks in that room on your inside sales team are you know, part of your competition, but there's also this mm-hmm. internal competition you have with yourself. And I just felt like I was losing the battle. And I started to think that, you know, maybe I wasn't a salesperson or the quote unquote salesperson. Mm-hmm. I remember pulling my boss aside and asking him what I was doing wrong. And he told me to continue to do what I was doing on the effort side, but to mm-hmm. stop trying to be what I thought a salesperson should sound like. And that was one of those things that it made sense to me as soon as it came out of his mouth.
Yeah. No, that's a great advice.
Yeah. I wasn't being myself over the phone because I had this, you know, image of what I thought the salesperson should sound like, but off the phone, I could draw people into a conversation, you know, strike mm-hmm. up a conversation with anyone and have this meaningful, genuine dialogue. But on the phone, it was like, pretty robotic, I'm sure.
Scripted, yes.
I made some tweaks, and really it was like trying to be myself more, be more genuine, mm-hmm. relax, and really just have fun with it. And within a week, I made my first sale, and it was 4 premium seats, upwards of $20,000, and it took me from the bottom of the board to the top.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm like I'm my face, if you could see it, I'm smiling ear to ear, because that's the sort of story that I just absolutely yes. love. You just never gave up. You kept going at it. You would ask for help. You used and applied what you were, you know, given from advice perspective, and it worked. Yes. And what great, genuine advice. Like, you're so right. Like, so often we get in our own way of just being ourselves. Like, I always tell people, like, we hired you because we thought you had something special. Be you.
Absolutely.
You
know? The genuine piece is so key in sales. And I think sometimes we steer away from that, or especially in the beginning, because you just don't know. So.
So you're there with the Clippers. You stayed about a year. And then you moved on to the Atlanta Hawks. What inspired you to move and to join the Atlanta Hawks and move across the country away from home again?
So when I moved back from Hawaii, I thought that was it for me on moving outside of California. I was like, I am here. I'm staying put. I'm in California. I wanted to be closer to family. Family is so incredibly important to me. So I just thought mm-hmm. that was it. Like, I'm in California for the long run. At the time, there was only one promotion internally since I got into the inside sales program. And again, that was coming up on a year. So I started to think that maybe there wasn't going to be an opportunity while I was here for me to, and if I wanted to advance in my career, maybe I needed to start looking at other options. And that may be outside mm-hmm. outside of the country. So I started meeting with account executives in the front office to pick their brains on their roles and how they got started. I ended up meeting more consistently with one of the group's account executives because I was becoming more and more intrigued on the group side of things. Though we as inside sales reps weren't really focused on selling groups, he would tell us, he would tell me like unique events that he was able to do, the fan experiences and the creativity that came with the role overall. And I really started to gravitate towards group sales after that. So fast forward a couple of weeks, I saw a group's position posted on Teamwork Online and talked to him about it. And he encouraged me to send in my resume on that platform, but also send it to him. He knew somebody at the Atlanta Hawks organization. And I had heard a lot of really great things about the organization, about not just the organization, just leadership in general. And so that sparked somewhat of an interest of me just kind of keeping an open mind, even though I had originally been like, I'm staying in California. So I got an interview and flew out to Atlanta, where I'd never been before. And again, was just open to seeing where it would take me. When I got back from Atlanta, I was offered the job. However, I saw that there was an opening with the Clippers in the groups department as well.
Okay.
I put my name in the hat, and I did end up getting an interview with a group sales manager at the time. So I did go through that interview process, and at the end asked what the process and timeline looked like, because I did have an offer on the table. And the group's manager at the time told me that they were still in early stages of interviews and they weren't ready to make any decisions yet. So I, with the timeline for Atlanta, I basically made my decision on the spot. I remember walking out of the room and calling my mom and telling her I was accepting the position with Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's so challenging when you have something there. It's like, do you take the risk of waiting out to see if the current team is able to to offer, right? Or, you know, and take a risk that you could lose this opportunity in Atlanta that you felt connected to. And obviously you've made the right choice. I mean, you've been in Atlanta ever since, and have grown up the ladder there. To Atlanta. And how long were you there in Atlanta selling group tickets before you started to pursue and look at that leadership track?
So I came to Atlanta in 2013. And I think that there was always interest, or at least curiosity about the leadership track. I think ever like day one with the Hawks, it was like rewarding for me to help others and watch their success. Like if somebody else made a sale, I got the same thrill that if I made it myself. So I tried to work closely with my then manager, Carter Berry, to see what like leadership responsibilities I could take on within the department as a group's rep. And at the Hawks, we have a leadership program called POD. And it's this program that puts you through management situations and trainings and provides guidance on becoming a leader. And it's, well, it's really puts reps through these situations overall. Yeah. I was in the program for 2 years, and then I did what we call POD 2.0, which is POD on steroids. It's super detailed and super intricate, and it's essentially you're building out how you would lead a department. And I would meet every week with our director, our then director, now VP, Eric Platt, and he would go over things that I was struggling with and would really push me on those things to try and get better and work on them. And it really helped me prepare in a way that I felt I was as ready as I was going to be without having the actual management experience.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, the Hawks have always had such a great reputation of building future leaders in the industry. And it's so great to hear that you took advantage of those opportunities. When you go through the process, do you just sign up and you automatically get in, or do you have to like apply and be accepted to go get into the POD and the POD 2.0?
That is a great question. It's a process. It's not everybody is accepted into the program overall. There are specific requirements that you would have had to hit as a rep, things like hitting your goal 2 years in a row, hitting what we call our hustle metrics, and then specific metrics set forth by your current manager. And there's normally six reps, I'd say 6 to 8 that are selected within the POD program.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And then for you, obviously, you took that and you utilized that to become an inside sales manager. And what was that process like for you developing and making that transition from the rep with very little experience, but had some training, into becoming a full-out inside sales manager?
Yeah, it was. I think that being in the POD program and having that hands-on experience as like you are mentoring inside sales representatives throughout the POD program. You're building out different trainings that you would host. You're meeting with them on a weekly basis. That's a small scale, but I think that on that small scale, it prepares you for different situations and circumstances that you could be put in. Obviously, once you get into being an inside sales manager, the experience that you get is when you're actually in it. And it's so much of, you are helping not only on the sales side, but it's this emotional side as well. And it's, you know, college students coming into really a lot of times their first job, folks coming into their first job. So it's really teaching that professionalism, the corporate world, you know, sales foundation, all of that. So obviously it was a little bit of a transition overall, but I luckily felt prepared overall, or as prepared as I could have been.
Yeah. And then from there, I mean, you were inside sales manager and then you moved over to lead the group sales team. So what was that transition like? And, you know, did you determine that or did they ask you to apply for that?
So it was a little bit of luck and opportunity. We had that the current group's manager ended up taking a role elsewhere, and it was a little bit of timing and luck and all of that good stuff. But I also think I was in a good position at that time. You know, I've been super fortunate because I've been surrounded by really incredible leaders with the Hawks. And I think that coming into that, my being an inside sales leader, like my first manager role, it's intimidating with, you know, being a first manager in a room with people you feel are way smarter than you. But what I've come to find is that they value my opinion just as much as I value theirs. And in various leadership positions throughout my time here, it's taught me the importance of surrounding yourself with people that you feel like you can go to, and you feel like they are going to push you in various ways. They'll challenge you by questioning your answers or your decisions, people who will discuss leadership books with you, who will push you to think differently and do things that you wouldn't otherwise do or even think to do. And I've been really fortunate, I think, with the Hawks organization that I've felt like I can lean on a lot of the leadership team there to try and learn from and just better myself overall.
And now today you're now the director of sales of Hawks and Skyhawks. Like, what has been your approach to developing up that ladder as a leader since that first manager
position? Absolutely. I got some really great advice, and it was just basically, it's okay to be vulnerable as a leader. And that was something that I really internalized, because I think that, you know, you don't have to know it all or pretend to know it all. And if you're open and willing to listen to those around you, those who you work with, whether it's leaders, your direct reports, whoever it is, and you're open to working collaboratively, that is going to be way more effective than trying to be a boss. You know, it's my way or the highway, you know, and not trying to take feedback or suggestions or even criticism. So I think one approach that I've taken along with me in my leadership roles is that, you know, I want to be somebody that is really, really open and has honest conversations and honest communication and is collaborative and, you know, takes feedback, takes criticism, just so that I can ensure that I'm hopefully bettering those around me, and the folks around me are doing the same on my end.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I usually tell people, you know, leadership and learning go hand in hand. And to your point, like, yeah, the expectation that you come in and you know it all isn't true, but that you're developing Absolutely. As a leader in that role, but you have had the skill set and the experiences enough to take on that role and the belief from the people who had hired you to learn and grow as you go, and that you'll develop those skills. And obviously, as you develop, you start to be curious about the next role.
Absolutely.
And then that develops another layer of curiosity that leads you to the next role. And all of a sudden, you've built this amazing ladder that's led you to 100%. Where you are today. What are you most excited about in this new position, and what are the new responsibilities?
The Hawk side, I'm still very much involved on the group sales side. So on the Hawk side, I love being in the mix with the reps and helping on the day-to-day. But I think that I'm most excited about the big picture planning and really being able to take a step back from what we have, you know, done these past couple of years process-wise and just seeing where we can improve. On the Skyhawk side, which is our G League team, this is going to be year two. So in year one, just helping launch the team in its first season was a lot of laying the groundwork. It was a ton of learning. Yes. And in season two, I don't expect the learning to stop, but I am hopeful that we can take what we laid, you know, foundation wise in year one and really just take off this season. Also, with this role, the simple exposure to every aspect of the business side has been really intriguing, from like setting prices on all products to learning business ops, you know, ticket ops, working really closely with analytics. It's been kind of a whirlwind, but a really great experience in and of itself.
Let's switch gears here for a second and talk a little bit about your lifestyle. You know, what have you found to be important while managing your lifestyle?
I came to Atlanta and obviously have found this incredible career that I love, but also this person who's amazing and is super, super supportive. I think one thing I would say on the lifestyle piece is, especially with folks, you know, in the sports world, is like having a partner that is really supportive of you is so incredible. And, you know, that's something that I feel really, really lucky to have found.
I think it's awesome that you met someone while in Atlanta, which is never easy, you know, being young and moving to a new city, and obviously being wrapped up in your career and your career goals, but also taking time to meet somebody there, which I'm so happy that you did. How would you describe your first date?
Well, our first date was at this place called Cypress Street Pint and Plate. It's a restaurant. And it was just an awesome connection right off the bat. We talked for like, I think it was 5 hours straight, which was unreal. It was like, whoa, can I, like, what else do you talk about? I don't know, but we found things to talk about. And just from there, we've been inseparable. And we currently have a dog named Cypress after our first date.
Oh, perfect.
Well, fun fact.
That's cool. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Fun fact. That's great. And so you guys, obviously you find time and make time for each other. And that's awesome that you found somebody that supports your career. And obviously
absolutely,
you guys probably
yes.
support each
we,
other.
We definitely find, Atlanta, there's so many things to do here normally. So from restaurants to, concerts to just outdoor stuff, there's always something to do. We are naturally like homebodies, so when we're going out, it's like to find some really good food. I think that's something that people are, I think, surprised on, like when they meet me, because I'm a little bit like, hello, how's it going? I'm a little out there. But I think, you know, when you get to know me, realize that, okay, she actually really enjoys her time at home. And like, that's my downtime. But I do, we find things around Atlanta, and mostly involving food and music. When we do end up exploring.
So far, you know, what has been the most rewarding experience or takeaway from your career?
So I keep a drawer of thank you notes that I have received since I started with the Hawks in 2013. And it was a recommendation from my then manager when I started. And basically, he said it was for you to be able to look back and look back on the thank you cards. And, when you're having a tough day, it's something that would remind you of why you do what you do. And early on, the thank you notes, the thank you cards were from clients when I was a rep. But when I got into pod and then leadership, they started coming from reps that I directly worked with and some that I didn't. And I would say far and above, the people that I've gotten to work with is hands down the most rewarding part of my career. And seeing a lot of those folks, you know, go off and have successful careers themselves, whether it's in sports or not, has been so rewarding.
Oh, that's fantastic. what a great like sentiment. So fun fact, I've kept every card that's been given to me since high school. Like,
that is amazing.
Isn't that crazy? I have, and with the same sentiment, I've never heard anybody else say that before. So I feel really connected to what you said, but I've like, and there's to that point, like you can just go back and open up a card and just like feel that sense of appreciation and just feel like that self-value when you feel, especially when you feel like maybe you're not impacting enough or doing enough or feel, you know? And so it was my high school graduation cards I kept, and I've kept every card since. And you can imagine my husband has like how many shoe boxes and boxes of cards that you just hold on to. I said, you wait, when I'm old, my whole house will be surrounded by all my cards.
You'd
be the card lady.
You
I'll be stuck. No, I love that. And I mean, what a great great advice and some way for you to have that reflection. Thanks. As well, you know, what advice do you have for men or women, you know, looking to grow their careers and somebody that have potentially could be in a similar path or situation you had been from the very beginning?
So I think that we often put limitations on ourselves of what we think we can do before we even try things. There's this little voice in our head, and it says, you know, what if I'm not good enough? What if I make a fool of myself? What if I fail? And that voice stops us from seeing what we can truly accomplish. And we all have that voice. But the ones who push through to find success just start to get used to the voice and push it aside so that each time it gets a little softer and softer. So my advice to women and men looking to grow their careers in the sports industry would just be to ignore that voice. Do the things that make you afraid, and you know, you have to push yourself, because those are the things that are going to help you grow.
And that's a wrap on episode 7. Thank you for listening to Women Blazers, and thank you to Angela for blazing trails and sharing her journey and insights with us today. She's truly one of the rising stars in our industry. As always, I encourage you to follow the podcast on Instagram at Women Blazers to stay connected. And look forward to episode 8, dropping Monday, July 6, featuring Kristen Kuhn, the Senior Vice President of Partnership Marketing, Brand, and Community for LAFC of the MLS. Until next time, have a great and productive week.